WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Bill Pullman plays Mr. Wrong in the new film comedy. He was married to Mrs. Wrong in the erotic thriller The Last Seduction. He played the father in Casper and the romantic lead in the hit comedy While You Were Sleeping. In Sleepless in Seattle, he was Meg Ryan's allergy-plagued fiancé. Last year, we invited Pullman to talk about his movies and his life. Here's a scene from The Last Seduction. He plays a cynical guy who's not quite cynical enough. He's not onto how his wife has set him up. She's literally taken the money and run. In this scene, toward the end of the film, a stranger has broken into his house and is trying to tie him up. The stranger has been sent by Pullman's wife, but Pullman doesn't know that.
Now what?
I'm gonna gag you.
How am I gonna tell you where everything is? Am I yelling? You have a gun. I'm cooperating. Forget the gag.
Gag's important.
Did you read a book on this? You know, kid, you don't look like a dopehead.
What?
I just write prescriptions, right? I got no stash. The money goes to a loan shark. I got some aspirin in the medicine cabinet, but other than that, I got nothing here you want.
I'm not interested in your drugs, all right?
You're just breaking in at random? Great. The guy next door is out of town for a month.
Open.
Did The Last Seduction put you through a lot of mood changes, mood swings, in the sense that, oh, boy, a great script. How exciting. Oh, it's just going to play on HBO and never get released theatrically. What a bummer. Oh, it's getting released theatrically and it's a big cult film now. You know, I mean, it just kept going back and forth between success and failure.
Yeah. And then it here accounts that, like, Linda Fiorentino was in France at screenings and they stood up at the end going, Linda, Linda, you know. I think, man, this was the same movie that we made for, like, I don't know, a couple mil in some warehouse down in Culver City. And, yeah, it was a surprise.
Did anybody stand up and chant, Bill, Bill?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think when you die in a movie, they don't end up kind of like calling for you to come back. But
one of the men are kind of chumps in the film.
Yeah. They, you know, in some realm. But I always thought that, like with Clay, that character, that he was probably the most appropriate man for her to be with. And she kind of, I get this from her performance too, that like there's just this gaming quality that they're like really right for each other. And if I hadn't slapped her at the opening, we would have gone on and just spent the money and had our life there in New York. But I slapped her, and she just suddenly decided, no, I'm going to take it all.
Let's go back to the beginning. You grew up in upstate New York. Your father was a doctor, and I think you had six siblings.
Right. Yeah?
So
right.
What was it like to have a father who's a doctor? Did he take care of you when you got sick?
Yeah, he did all of the, I used to have sore throats a lot, so he used to roll me over on the couch and shoot me up with penicillin.
Oh, see, I hated that as a kid, and my doctor used to scare me, you know. He came in, I thought, this guy, I always associated his kind of face with the face of a doctor and with pain, because he always gave me a shot of penicillin.
So, did you get it in your rump?
Of course. That's how they gave it to all kids then. No matter what you had, right? You got a shot of penicillin.
I think it was the humiliation of that it was...
Well, it must have been worse getting it from your father than getting it from a doctor who at least left when it was over, right?
Well, you know, it's on the family sofa, and, you know, that way you could just kind of keep lying there. You wouldn't have to get up. But he was always interesting that way, how very supportive of the life that I chose, and I think he kind of had a lot of wisdom in the way he dealt with things, and he was always kind of interested in just in terms of his ego. I guess I've been thinking about this lately because I was thinking, you know, I've kind of, every once in a while somebody will say, well, you're just not your regular guy or somebody, you're not hugely demanding on the sets. You know, I really almost kind of like feel more like a producer when I'm acting than an actor, in that I really want the whole team to do well and I don't need any special attention and everything. So it's somehow egoless, and that sometimes can be also read as dismissible in some ways. Like, if you're going late, does he suffer? No, he's not suffering. Let's keep going. You know? and I thought, you know, I realized that with my father's, and the whole idea of being in medicine is that you have very little ego and you have a lot of ego, that in some ways you are very kind of attending and you're in a very service kind of situation to other people, and you're very intricately involved with reading them, understanding them, sensing their pain, sensing their needs. And at the same time, you're making decisions that you have to, like, really be hugely strongly behind. And otherwise, if you live in doubt or hesitancy, you're not going to succeed. And in that way, I think I kind of – that was kind of the climate of what it was to be a male ego in our household.
I know before you went to college and studied acting, you went to, I think, a two-year technical college to study building construction, is that right?
Right, yeah.
So what were you thinking of doing at the time?
Well, I was kind of in a period where I didn't want to do what my brothers had done, which was go to small Ivy League colleges and everything. And I wanted to do something where I felt like I could at that point, I was really fascinated by barns. It was, you know, I was 17, I think, and I was just aware of the fact that in my part of Western New York State, there was a lot of agricultural life that was disappearing. And I loved the architecture of barns. And I thought, I'll go and go to this building construction program and I'll learn about making barns and makes barns. No, it wasn't very practical at all. But once I got there, I realized that instead I was spending hours and hours doing formulas where you figure out how many water closets an office building needs. And I realized, this isn't what I had in mind. Maybe I ought to go into something else. And by that time, I had kind of gotten attracted to this program, this drama program, this guy Bill Campbell in Delhi, New York, was running, and he was very charismatic, and so I started doing theater there.
No, after you studied acting in college, you went to Montana and taught at the University of Montana, ended up...
It was Montana State University, yeah. In
okay,
Richmond.
Thank you. And then ended up teaching there, and then finally, I think, chairing the drama department. Was it hard for you to teach with so little experience at the time?
It was a big charade. The best acting I ever did in my life. I even had a corduroy coat with patches on my elbows. That's how insecure I was. Oh, man, I was just a couple years older than anybody there. And I hadn't planned to teach. I planned to go to New York and work as a professional because I knew that I thought, you know, teachers should have had practical life experience. And then Montana's so beautiful, and I'd been out there for a bunch of years before doing open-air theater, and I liked all these people involved with this program, and I said, all right, I'll do it. And I did it for 1 year thinking that that'll be it. And then they said, oh, stay, And so I stayed a second year, but by the middle of the second year, I knew I had to kind of just say, whew, I pulled this off and nobody's really turned on the lights, so I might as well get out while the going's good.
And you went where, to New York?
Yeah, went to New York City.
And started acting in theater?
Yeah, I once...
let me ask you, when you started doing auditions and they said, well, what's your experience? And you said, well, I taught acting in Montana. Was that considered an important credential?
No, I never told anybody.
Oh.
I never told them I trained as a director. I kind of, even in a way, because that was my training, was as a director in theater, for theater directing. And you're living on practically air. I had no money, and I was doing survival jobs for like $3.50 an hour. So it felt rather sad to say, I was just a college professor last year. Right, yeah.
Now, Ruthless People was your first film, and I think your first comedy as well. Was comedy unlike what you were used to? It really was a big change for you?
Yeah, that was a very... It was a surprise because I had... I'd kind of made my way around New York City with some, with parts that were like a very kind of physical troubled dramas and the other things that made me very surprised that I was going to do this big Hollywood comedy. And later I looked back and I thought, you know, that Ruthless People is actually one of the few comedies that are rated R. So that was a pretty racy comedy, you know, but at the time it felt like selling out a little bit, but it was a surprise. And then since then, I have kind of really enjoyed a lot of these comedies. So it feels like a very natural kind of extension of what I'm interested in. But I have to say, the best funny to me is funnies that come out of a movie like Last Seduction.
Yeah, right.
There's something about, I know those are the movies I laugh most at, is when it feels like you aren't trying to make a comedy, and it's somehow, it's very serious, but it's also very funny.
Yeah, I agree. Now you have another movie coming up soon called Mr. Wrong, which stars you and Ellen DeGeneres. Can you give us a preview?
Well, I'm very fond of this whole character and the story and everything. It's a black comedy. That's one of the things, reasons why I was thinking about Ruthless People, because they were trying to justify the fact that there can be some tough, weird, dangerous zones you can go to in a comedy and maybe get an R and still make some money and not have everybody fear that they're going to just be in a clunker or something. But Ellen is a woman who's not with a guy, and there's a lot of pressure on her to find somebody, and we meet each other, and I'm a very right kind of guy, and it feels like the most romantic of the romantic encounters you could ever imagine. She goes a little far, she goes a little too early, but I'm sure it's happened, but all of us, but that, and then that feeling the next day, is this for real? I think it's for real. I think it's a dream. It's great. And then in the slowest incrementations, this character, Whitman, you realize is not exactly what she had in mind, but he's very obsessively in love with her, and he's pursuing her. And some say that he becomes, you know, just the thing you want to avoid and get away from. It's like it's a nightmare. It's the monster. But I like to think of Whitman as culturally unintegrated. He's marching to his own drummer. He's never a threat to her, but he just has his own passions and his own inclinations, which when he decides to really allow the world to see the way he really feels, it's a little scary.
Well, that sounds great. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thanks. It's a great privilege to be on the show that I listen to so much.
Bill Pullman recorded last summer. He stars in the new comedy Mr. Wrong, which opens next weekend. This is Fresh Air.